From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made last weekend when a local Facebook post went viral. The news of the proposed cuts in the Rochester City School District has led to a number of community conversations. We've seen protests, news conferences, and more this week. While cuts are pending board approval, and the board is set to vote next week, teachers, students, and parents are already discussing how to adapt to what could happen in their classrooms in January. Meanwhile, support for teachers and students has swelled over the last week, and some of that support, at least some of the outreach we've heard, comes from the suburbs. And that's where the Facebook post comes in. On Saturday, Fairport resident Ginny Mayer wrote that she would vote no on Fairport School's capital budget plan because, quote, "I cannot in good conscience vote to have the state cover over 77% of the cost of optional items like new athletic fields and fancier cafeteria tables while the largest district in our county continues to struggle," end quote. Her post was shared widely across social media platforms, inspired replies from other people in the suburbs who asked what they could do to support our CSD teachers and students. And so this hour, it's a conversation about where things stand. And if you are wondering what solidarity looks like and what solutions are out there, we're going to talk about that no matter where you live. And we asked Ginny Mayer to come in, a resident of Fairport and a concerned citizen, who, by the way, I must say about Ginny, before she even accepted, I want to say how much I admire your response about this, because I know you view yourself as one concerned citizen, not an expert, not the sort of the be-all, end-all, but I thought your post showed concern. So thanks for trusting us, and thanks for coming in.
Yeah, thanks for inviting me.
Also with us is Jesse Keating, who's a community organizer and an activist in Pittsford. Welcome to you.
Thank you.
And welcome to Robert Hoggard, who's a former Rochester City School District teacher and a doctoral student at the Warner School of Education. Welcome to you.
Thank you so much for having me back, Evan.
Robert has a view on where things are going in terms of possible solutions, which is part of this too. We're going to get to a lot of different things this hour. Ginny, I'll just start with you. And again, knowing, you know, that you're someone who's just kind of taking a look at the budget and trying to figure out your place and how to impact here, tell me a little bit more about why you decided not only to vote no, but to post about it publicly.
So I had been, you know, just regularly voting yes on every school budget that ever comes in front of us. And I am supportive of the schools. And a couple weeks ago, about a week before the election or before the vote, my husband asked me how I was going to vote. And I said, well, of course I'll vote yes. But he reminded me that I've been reading a lot and doing a lot of, I'm very concerned about the segregation in the city and the differences between the city and the suburbs and what our role is. And I've been reading a lot of different things, including work by Dr. Ibram X. Kendi, who was just here a few weeks, maybe about a month ago, talking about how to be anti-racist. And one of the things that Kendi says is you're either, you know, racist policies are things that contribute to any policy that contributes to racial inequity in all sorts of different ways. And if you think about the policies that we have, the fact that we have many different school districts, all of which are applying to the state for money, that seemed like something that we could have an influence on. So I thought I'd vote no, but I wasn't really going to say anything about it. And then Friday, the layoff notices came, and I saw a lot of discussion on Facebook from people I know who teach in the district or have kids in the district. And at the same time, we had gotten a little video from the Fairport schools reminding us to vote. And in that video, we were reminded that it actually wasn't going to cost us that much because we were asking for 77.8%. Or 77.8% of what we were asking for to cover our capital projects was going to be refunded to us by the state through their building fund. And that just seemed obvious to me, that we were asking for things that weren't really necessary to provide a good education to our students. They're wonderful things, and I don't want to denigrate the Fairport School Board for wanting those things, but I think we just can't keep doing things the way that we're still doing them. We need to think about who is getting money from the state and for what reasons.
So you were juxtaposing what Fairport, among many districts, is trying to do, which is their capital improvements,
right,
with the struggles that, and literally cutting teachers in the middle of the school year in Rochester.
Right.
And it felt wrong to you.
Yes, and I realized that, you know, that pot of money is not something that is, if Fairport had rejected it, the state would have said, oh, now we've got this money to give to RCSD. I realized that it wasn't a one-to-one swap.
Sure, but I think in the Kendi framework, Kendi urges us to think about racism as forget intention. He says essentially everything is either racist or anti-racist.
Right.
And we think about racism too narrowly. So policies, actions, government decisions either lessens inequity and the divide, or it broadens that divide.
Right.
And you are looking at this saying, I know it's not one-to-one, but this just felt wrong, and this felt like if I'm applying that framework, I've got to vote no.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah. So then I chose to share it on my Facebook page, which isn't very big, and and then later in the weekend shared it on Twitter, and then
a few
Rachel
other people
Barnhart
shared it.
shared it. So once Rachel Barnhart shares one of your posts, then lots of people see it. And I will say that one of the things that really amazed me, I was very nervous when I saw that she shared it, because I just thought, I'm going to get a lot of blowback for this, because I'm not an expert. I don't really know exactly how all of these funding questions work. I don't really understand why the Rochester School District is in the shape that it's in. But I did think, you know, my values are such that, like, I'm not going to ask the state for money if I think we should be able to manage it. I think my point was just that I think that I was really impressed by the number of people who responded to those posts in a positive way.
You're sitting there and you're overstuffed after a long meal, and you notice a neighbor literally has no food to eat, and then you're asking for someone to pay for dessert.
Kind of.
Yeah. Okay. Jesse, how do you view the larger question of what people in the suburbs ought to be doing in regards to what we're seeing happening in Rochester?
Well, I just want to say, first of all, that Ginny, I was really impressed with her message, and I hope that it translated, and I think it translated across many different networks and across districts here in Monroe County and beyond, because she stood up for something and put a message out there that we've got to start thinking outside of our own little bubbles that we live in our own little school districts, that, you know, let's get more for our kids that already have opportunity and advantage in every single area. So it really moved me, and I thank you for that. We have become a culture that's just okay with segregation. We're okay with it. There is no separate but equal from Plessy versus Ferguson. That never really happened, because there is no equal when all the resources are on one side. And I look at the districts, the suburban districts, as owning a piece of the Rochester City School District issue and problem based on how we do stay in that bubble and how we do take a look at, I know there are things that we need to do right away. I call it triage. I call it, hey, we've got to get, maybe we do have to get state aid and an emergency one-shot funding so that we don't have to lay teachers off and really harm children in the schools. But I also think there's a bigger issue here that we have to think about countywide, and that is accepting segregation for what it is right now, and how can we actually change it, and who's going to grow a backbone and step up and start having that discussion.
Robert Hargard, what does solidarity look like in practice if it's actually going to happen in this community? And by the community, I mean the entire county, suburbs, city of Rochester, et cetera.
I think that we can point to a very specific example to someone who ran very recently and sort of eloquently united some affluent white areas and some impoverished black areas. I think it's Councilwoman-elect Mary Lupien. She ran against three other candidates. She ran against a cop. She ran against a cop who's well-known. She ran against Michael Geraci, who's a well-known lawyer. She ran against an activist in the community. And she still weaved a message that sort of weaved together and united the Browncroft and Witten Road area and the Beechwood area. She said to Browncroft and Witten Road, hey, we need walkable and bikeable neighborhoods and a sustainable economy. And they said, yes, she listened to them, that's what she heard. And then she went down and walked down to the other side of her district And she found in the Beachwood area that we need housing and we need home ownership and we need to deal with police brutality. And so she weaved those tenets together. And I'm watching her and her positionality and how she'll be supported by some of us Black activists and how she might advocate for us and unite us. Because I think that full stop, while the Senate Judiciary Committee is convening and we have a thug in the White House, that sort of sits in the White House on the basis of keeping the urban communities and rural communities apart. And that's his election strategy. And there hasn't been a candidate nationally that has weaved us together enough to sort of penetrate that strategy. I think that we're in trouble. And so when we look at solidarity, I think we can point to that. You look back at, through the pendulum of history, you can point back to, if anyone has saw the movie Harriet, you can point back to Harriet Tubman's relationship with the Senator William Henry Seward, who was hiding slaves in his mansion in not too far down here in New York State. So when you look at some moments of allyship and what they mean and how they speak to the tenor of what America and the tenor of what the fabric of what America is, I can point to those examples as cogent examples that have united us in such a way around these progressive issues and values.
And what might it look like now if someone lives in Pittsford or Greece or Fairport in this county thinking about this issue?
That's interesting, you know, because I reject the notion of countywide schools. Now, I know that might get me in trouble because you got a professor at my school, Kara Finnegan, who researches on such, and I'm in a class getting graded by Nancy Ayres, who talks about de-territorializing and re-territorializing and studying space and place and sector, et cetera, et cetera. That can get really, really wonky. And so when you peel back that, I think when we say that Black and brown, low-income kids, if they would just get together in a system with white affluent kids, that we would be better? No, because there are many districts across the country that are seeing achievement gaps where the white students are graduating and going on to Ivy Leagues and tier one institutions, and the Black students are either dropping out and then going to jail, or dropping out and then going to a homeless shelter, or dropping out or finishing and still graduating without the skills. And so what we have to do is we have to redesign schools, urban schools, so that they can mitigate the social factors of our community, because schools, it's not just about pedagogy and andragogy. It's about sort of dealing with poverty, dealing with housing, dealing with all of the issues before a student ever walks into the door and before they can even ever be taught. And so that's what I'm thinking about, Evan.
And to be clear, there is a push, even if it's not fully unified right now, to put heat on New York State to, at least in the short term, come up with the funding to make sure Rochester is not cutting teachers so students don't go back to school after winter break in January. Hundreds, if not thousands, of students with new teachers starting from scratch in relationship building in January. You are not on board with calling on the state to even do a one-shot fix, no?
No. When we look at our per-pupil funding, it's one of the highest per-pupil funding formulas in the country at $23,000 per student, right? We have nearly $1 billion budget, right? Educating all of these kids, right? And Terry Dade pointed to he wrote an article yesterday about charter enrollment has steadily gone up, which means that parents have steadily reminded the district that they do not have trust in the district and taking their kids out. And while charter enrollment has gone up, you have the district continually to hiring teachers. So that's like saying you're working at, I don't know, you're working at a coffee shop and there's not enough work and you keep hiring people. That's not sustainable. You know, and so you got to point to that. And then you have to point to Justin Murphy, who's on paternal leave. And Justin, I can't wait for you to get back from paternal leave, but enjoy
Reporter
your baby.
For the Democrat and Chronicle.
Yeah. Wonderful guy. Enjoy. But we can't wait for you to get back. And, you know, he wrote an article about Barbara Dean Williams, who said and who told cabinet and members down at the chief of schools office that what needs to happen is that they were going to overspend so that the state could bail them out. And that was the strategy. And that's how we got here more recently.
All right. So What I want to do next is I want to bring in the voice of a former superintendent in a suburban district. It's Howard Mafucci, who is now a member of the Monroe County Legislature, for his thoughts on if you're a suburban voter, if you're a suburban parent, if you're thinking about school projects in the same way that Ginny Mayer was, is it logical to think, look, for now I'm voting no? Or if there's another way to think about this and what it means to actually be supportive. And then I can't wait to get Robert Hoggard's take on this, because I think, you know, Howard's probably thinking like a lot of people are, which is that right now we got to turn our eyes to New York State. So let's listen to Howard, and then we're going to kind of come back and talk about what solutions look like everywhere.
Thanks. Happy to be here.
Well, one of the reasons I reached out to you is, you know, people may know you now as a county legislator. You are a school superintendent. You spent your career in schools. Remind people of your resume in public schools.
Well, I taught 7th and 8th grade social studies for 14 years. I was also a football and hockey coach in Pittsburgh.
I don't think I knew that.
Yeah, I coached. I actually merged the football teams and the hockey team, the football team and hockey team, into what's known as the Panthers now. And then we made some family decisions that coaching was taking too much of my time. So I went to school administration, which was still time consuming, but it was a little different. I worked for 3 years as an assistant principal at Gates Child Eye, 5 years as high school principal in ER, and then 14 as superintendent of schools in East Rochester. 19 years in ER.
Okay. 14 as the superintendent.
As the superintendent.
Okay. And as suburban districts go, by the way, ER is near the top of the list at free and reduced lunch, children coming from homes that are in poverty.
We have our challenges. Yes, but my attitude was very simple, as many of our staff members. We didn't really care where a student came from. We just wanted to help them get where they wanted to go. So,
I believe, and I'm sure you believe, that Terry Dade and the Rochester City School Board feel that way about students. But they are in a crisis situation. And so one of the reasons we wanted to talk to you was we wanted to get the perspective of someone who's been there in the suburbs, but also dealing with budget constraints, understanding the challenges, and then understanding the mindset of people trying to ask, well, what could I do? So let's start with how you sort of see from a distance. I mean, I know you're not inside the RCSD, but you've been a superintendent. Do you have empathy, sympathy for what they're having to do? I mean, how does it hit you?
I do. It's clearly a very challenging situation, and I want to be fair because I do not know all the ins and outs of what happened. Mm-hmm. You know, I have heard some information related to the fact that they're in this situation because someone somewhere along the way decided to use one-shot revenues for continuing programs. That is not good fiscal policy.
But by the way, that's true on every level of government, isn't it? We see that in whether it's a city, county, state, whatever. If you are relying on one-shots, which means you're selling an asset and you get the revenue from the sale one time, as opposed to a long-term fix, you're going to end up in trouble, right?
Correct. And it's interesting because that's the actual scenario I'm dealing with in my job as a county legislator. But we'll park that for now.
Some other conversation some other day. We'll talk about Monroe County's fiscal health, because I know in your couple of years there, you've got some real concerns there too.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. So, right, we don't know exactly what happened in the city of Rochester School District. And frankly, I think that lack of transparency has been frustrating for a lot of us, because we don't want to just play the blame game for the sake of it. We'd like to know what went wrong and try to figure out how do you avoid this. But regardless, you've got a new superintendent. He probably didn't expect this when he took the job. And he's made the decision that there have to be some cuts in personnel, including teachers, in the middle of the year. He has told City Newspaper, he has said, nobody wants to do this in January, but this is the only way, because otherwise we're going to look at another budget crisis of tens of millions of dollars. That, I know, it worries you when you're cutting teachers in the middle of a school year. Why?
Well, first, and I want to be fair, so I'm making a judgment without knowing all the details.
I hear that.
I have never been a fan of mid-year cuts that are very disruptive to children's lives. So if that's the only way they can solve their problem, then so be it. However, I do know this, that there is one government organization that could come to the rescue temporarily, and that's the state. The county can't do it. Other schools can't do it. The city can't do it. It would be the state. So I would assume they've pursued that option, and it may not be there, but I would still suggest that they do everything they possibly can to cover their expenses now and deal with the ramifications of that at the end of the school year, when they can start their, well, it would actually be before the end of the school year, but start the planning process for the next school year. That would be my wish list.
Sure, fair enough. And we've seen hundreds, if not now thousands, of students and parents protesting just in the last week. Is it your feeling then that, again, there's a lot of supposing without knowing the details, but just at least knowing the broad outlines of mid-year cuts, if you're a superintendent, would you try to unify everyone behind the message that says, this is our option, we must be unified and tell New York State, you're the only option we have, this is a unified voice, we need you, don't let this happen?
Well, I think what I would kind of do first is, what happened, why did it happen, and now how do we fix it financially now? And I think they've probably done that, you know, determine what do they really need, and then ask for a bit of time with some financial support to actually prevent disruptions to children's lives. I mean, that's my view from afar.
Yep.
I will acknowledge it's likely somewhat unfair because I really don't know what's really happening behind the scenes. But I do know this, that there are probably more than one school district in New York State struggling because we haven't really done foundation aid the way it's supposed to be done. And the solution to that is in a sentence or a paragraph. It's a very long essay that's likely a book. And we're going to have to confront that at some point down the road, because we have lots of school districts that rely on state aid. And, you know, I continue to worry about what the next recession could do to state aid, because the school districts that rely on budget votes, it's almost impossible to go above the cap these days. So there is kind of this ticking time bomb out there that at some point we need to look at. But getting back to the city's issue, I would strongly suggest, and I guess I'd use the word begging the state for a bit of a bailout now, with the commitment that we will address
the long-term,
whatever structural issues we have towards the end of the school year in preparation for the next school year.
Sure. Talking to Howard Mafucci, a Monroe County legislator who spent 14 years as a school superintendent in East Rochester. And another reason we wanted to bring you here is because of your work in the suburbs of Monroe County. Part of the conversation this hour is focused on, well, you know, we kind of bifurcate the city and the county issues as if it's just city and suburbs and everything is separate. But we've been hearing from a lot of people this week saying, look, I live in the suburbs, but I care. What can I do? And as one example, you know, you've got people asking, we have project votes, you know, communities voting on school projects. Fairport voted, for example, this week. And we had voters saying, should I not vote for this part of this project if I vote thumbs up? Calls for some state reimbursement. And shouldn't that money go to the city? And I don't want to ask the state for another dime for my district in the suburbs that's doing comparatively better until the city gets its help. Is that a logical position?
Well, I think it's certainly a worthwhile position if somebody wants to do that. I can only, you know, put my own superintendent hat back on.
Yeah.
And my primary responsibility was to ensure that the school district that I worked in was taken care of in the best way possible. And, you know, clearly I think this all took place with a vote around the Fairport schools and some renovations or capital project they want to do in Fairport. They have needs in Fairport. And those needs needed, after a process of deciding what they wanted to do, why they wanted to do it, and how they're going to pay for it, resulted in a bond issue that's a necessary project for the district. And it obviously was approved. So, you know, I think it's commendable that people would like to do that. But, you know, again, school districts operate. We have independent school districts in New York State, and everybody wants to make sure that their school district is functioning properly based on the variety of needs.
Yeah, I think the comparison would probably sound like this. The hope among the voters in the suburbs who are voting no with an eye on the city's problems sounds something like this. My house needs new carpeting. My house needs roof repair. My house needs a new furnace. But the house across the street doesn't have walls. And I'm not going to ask for help putting in new carpeting until the house across the street at least has walls and a roof over it. And that's how they view what's going on in the city of Rochester. Knowing that everything is sort of its own project in isolation, is there a way for a unified voice? In other words, if every suburban district were saying no, 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 until the city gets what it needs, could that have an impact? Is that possible?
Well, I really don't think so, although One of the issues that I think we need to kind of address, and I'll use a county example. We just did $79 million worth of work at the airport. That $79 million came to this area for airport improvements. Given what I know about some of the needs of Monroe County residents, why weren't we given the option to take some of that money and instead of using it at the airport, fix some other things that were wrong? So, you know, I think
the airport is fancy. Now,
I know that. And you know, again, that money would have gone someplace else.
I mean, I'm being a little flip here, but you're right. I've traveled recently. It looks nice, I guess. Is it doing anything economically? I mean, like, what's the impact of all that money?
Well, the reason that I bring that up is that, again, it shows that all these issues are not easy issues to talk about. I just saw something yesterday where a baseball player is signing a 9-year contract at $324 million.
That's right.
Those stadiums that allow him to make that kind of money are financed in many ways through government assistance.
And they're often built, I mean, in Comiskey on the south side of Chicago, Yankee Stadium in the Bronx, they're not far from very much struggling school districts and schools themselves.
And I think, again, we're getting into very broad issues.
Sure.
And, you know, one of the definitions of economics is allocating scarce resources. So if you have a dollar to spend, personally, I think we need to have much more in-depth conversations about what do we really want to do with that dollar, because it's scarce and it should go for the greater good of pretty much everyone. But it's a philosophical discussion that you have to have, and it gets into real meaty issues for people who run organizations. You know, as a superintendent of East Rochester Schools, we had significant needs for our students. We had significant capital needs. And I looked out for the interests of East Rochester first.
So let me close this conversation with you with this question then. As someone who lives in the suburbs, someone who is a legislator, someone concerned about the health of all schools, including the Rochester City School District, when people ask, what can I do in the suburbs to show my support? Because I care about what's happening to students in Rochester, even if I don't live there, what comes to mind?
Well, two things. First, fix foundation aid. So become more aware of how foundation aid is impacting your local school district and neighboring school districts. That's number one. And then one of the vehicles we have in this area to kind of cooperate on regional kind of solutions is through BOCES. And I know that the city students utilize programs there as well as suburban students do. And I think we can look at BOCES as a way to become more effective and efficient with common programs for our children.
Does it make sense for people to write letters or call their state representatives and say, hey, you at the state, you in Albany, this is your moment for that district that needs help, and I want you to do it?
Absolutely. And, you know, one of the things I learned very early on, if you really want people to become engaged in what they need and want, you are very clear about what do you want to do, why do you want to do it, how is it being paid for, and be very transparent about each of those pieces of that puzzle. You know, we do, if you look at the rate of the percentage of people who vote in elections, you could make the case that we kind of get the governments we deserve, and it's unfortunate. But again, people are busy, but this is an important issue. I mean, we need one of the things that will be occurring shortly because of the change in leadership is the Council of Governments is going to be reconfigured, and there's going to be a vehicle for each one of the governments in this area to kind of communicate with each other a little more effectively, because we are a very large area and we have regional problems that need creative solutions.
Thanks for coming in. Always nice to talk to you.
You bet.
Howard Mafucci, former superintendent of the East Rochester School District. First of all, Ginny Mayer, does that change or ease your views as a, if you're just joining us, Ginny is just a resident of Fairport who wrote a piece that a lot of people were talking about, just a post on social media explaining why you voted no on your own school's project in Fairport, feeling like I can't be voting yes when I see the city of Rochester hurting so much and needing so much. Did former Superintendent Mafucci's views change your mind at all?
No. And I think one of the reasons I actually very much appreciated that he articulated that his job as a superintendent in East Rochester was to do the best he could for his district.
Head down.
And I get that. I mean, and I would disagree with Robert that the solution, I don't know how to solve these problems, but it seems to me from sort of a larger view that a unified school district in the county is going to provide a better mechanism for making sure that all of the kids in the county get what they need. And my colleague at St. John Fisher, Dr. Jeff Lyles, is a historian of education, but he always reminds me that power is about who gets what, when, where, and how. And I don't know how we ever correct the power imbalance between the suburban areas of this county, which are so much wealthier than the urban area of this county, without trying to unify them. So voting no on a single capital project in Fairport, which I knew was not going to change the outcome of that vote, was a symbolic act mostly. But I think I was glad that when I shared it, that it got a lot of play, because I really feel like the only real solution is for us to think of ourselves as a single community and be ready to advocate for everybody together. And I'm not sure how you do that in separate districts.
All right. Well, Robert Hargard, the former superintendent, says, number one, fix foundation aid. Number two, advocate. Call on the state, et cetera. So let's start with foundation aid. Fix foundation aid. Yes or no?
No.
That ship has sailed anyway?
That ship has sailed. Let's stop fighting. We've been fighting. And thank you, Senator Robert Jackson, for opening up the case, but no.
Okay. So then he says, okay, advocate for a state, again, kind of a one-shot call to bail out, whatever the case may be. You're saying no. So what would the solution be? If the keys to the district are in your hand, or you're advising Superintendent Day to the board, you're seeing another way to do this.
Yeah.
The reason Robert's laughing is he knows he's going to be sooner than later.
Oh no! Stop that.
but what's the solution that you see that maybe isn't currently being either considered or on the table?
Well, I think there's a couple. You know, I think first, I've seen some things since Nate F. Harris is my advisor at the Warner School, and he studies presidents, deans, and the governance process and bureaucracy. And so we've been looking at some organizational theories and using that to unpack what's going on in the district, and I'm publishing some stuff soon. So to get that started, I'll say that I want to point to the Rochester Beacon, and they published an article, Is Dr. Urbanski the Real Superintendent? And since 1987, he's been wielding too much power in the school district and hiding behind organized labor. And it's like, I want to see new leadership. It's time for new leadership, and we could make a nice retirement party for Dr. Urbanski. He served well in 1987 to 2019, 32 years. Before I was born, he was leading the school district with the same analysis and the same, we've been doing the same thing. And so when Terry Day comes in and he says, when you look back at the district that I came from, it is a countywide system. We spend $3 billion to educate 187,000 students. The Rochester City School District spends $2 billion. I'll tell you why. They spend $1 billion in the operational budget, but then they spend another $1 billion in the modernization project. That's why you see the new Monroe High School. So it's like there's an appropriation issue that we have to deal with. And we have to stop having Dr. Urbanski sort of hide with his political shrewdness behind organized labor and sort of controlling dissent in the news. And what we have to do is we have to sort of move towards some solutions. And I'm just go through my positionality in this real quick,
yeah,
because I don't want to be framed as anti-union. I don't want you to get callers coming in as anti-union.
Okay.
So I want to okay, just set the record straight as an African-American black man who grew up on Section 8 and who grew up when the food stamps was had the stigma tied to it, and you had to hand it over to the cashier and you held up the whole line to get your food stamps. That was my mom. I remember my mom, who started off as a lunch aide. I remember that. My mom and dad are card-carrying union members. My uncle, Clarence Gaskins, a machinist unionist,
across clear across the country for my 18th birthday. He said, I got something really good. I said, okay, I'm going to get a lot of money from him because I know he's got a lot of money. You know what he gave me on my 18th birthday? He gave me an application to vote because he's 7 years old. And he remembered the time that in order to vote as a black man, he had to guess how many bubble gums was in a jar to vote. And so we have to do a few things. There's a few things that I think we can do, because if we keep doing what we've been doing, charter aid has been going up. Parents have been taking charter kids out of the school. We keep doing what we're doing. We're going to go to 60 million. So we could restructure the chief of schools. We could lay off everyone but Idonia, and we could promote her to the chief diversity officer. That can save us some money. We can incentivize more seasoned teachers to retire early. Now, I wouldn't go and do a whole bunch at some time, because you know they have institutional leaders, they can coach some people. So not everybody at once. I think there should be a mix, because when you come in and you cut the young teachers, it gets a little hard. And then I think you can also beyond that, you can freeze professional development for the year. And I've heard that there have been some young activists within the Rochester Teachers Association that have presented to Dr. Urbanski, we are willing to save our professional development fund if you offer that, and we can save more jobs.
How much money?
He said no. I'm not sure. You got to do the cost benefit analysis. That's why we got investigative journalists to do that. But there's some cost savings there, certainly, because Terry Dade has put it forth. And it's just charter enrollment is going up and up and up and up and yep, because we have forgotten why we're here. We forgot that the attorney general was just here investigating Trayvon Devon Roe, and that his family is suing the district and a whole host of other people, the mayor and everybody, because his mother lost a life because the system does not work for black people. So I say, let's move beyond the basic, let's give everybody a raise and keep everybody on staff, and let's focus on it now. And I'll say this, and I'll stop, and I'll let my panelists show. I'll let them show their solidarity. James Baldwin said it like this: I waited my mother's time. I made it my father's time. I waited my niece and nephew's time. How long you want me to wait? How long you want to wait for your progress? And I ask that to your listeners today, Devin. And I just want to share the panel with you all. I didn't want to take too much time.
That's okay. I want to let that thought sort of stay with us for a moment. Let's take our only break of the hour. We'll come back. We'll talk to Jesse and Jenny about that. We're talking about what solidarity means and looks like in a district that's struggling. Robert Hoggard, you just heard, is a former RCSD teacher. He ran for school board. He's a doctoral student at the Warner School of Education. Jesse Keating is a community organizer and activist in Pittsford. Jenny Mayer is a resident in Fairport. Let's get right back to it after our only break. Coming up in our second hour, does urbanism go away during the winter months? When we say urbanism, we mean walkability, pedestrian-friendly access, really access for anyone and everyone, not just people with cars. And yes, when it snows, plowing happens, sometimes into bike lanes or onto sidewalks. It's not just a conversation about snow plowing. It's about what it means to be truly based in urbanism all year long. That's next hour. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. So Jesse Keating, yeah, I think what we're seeing this hour is there's not going to be one simple, easy solution. What I do hear is that disagreement about the path forward is probably productive as long as people actually are engaged or care. But I'm going to ask you a direct question. Mm-hmm. You know, you're someone who lives in Pittsford. Mm-hmm. You care about what's happening in Rochester. Mm-hmm. Do you think most of your neighbors do?
No, I don't. And I think that is part of the problem. Howard, I love what Howard said.
The former superintendent of East Rochester.
Yes, yep. Howard Mafucci had some great points to share. But, you know, he said we've got to talk about these things are hard to talk about. Yes, they are hard to talk about, but we've got to talk about them. And that's another reason why I appreciate what Ginny wrote, because there's a whole conversation happening based on somebody speaking up and standing up. Robert's solutions, I think, are fantastic. But I also think there's a both and here. I also think that we can stop the bleeding right now with the state aid. And I love the idea of taking some time to figure out what we're going to do so that we don't get in this situation again in Rochester schools. Mm-hmm. So, I think that we all have to stand up and
take some kind of action. Pittsford Town Board Member Kevin Beckford always says, you know, you got to use your position, power, and agency in your life personally to make these changes, to be an anti-racist, as Dr. Kendi talks about. So we all need to stop and think about, what exactly is my position? What can I do? What power do I have? What agency do I have in my home, in my community, in my own school districts, as an advocate, as a voice? And my intention, after, you know, spending the last couple of years really working with the Pittsford school districts to level up on the cultural competency and start to get teachers trained and start to really provide an incredible, excellent environment for all students in that district. We see that happening. It's starting to roll. They're doing a great job right now. I'm now turning my sights to Rochester because I owe that to them, and I want to use my whatever position, power, and agency I have to help. I don't know all the details. I don't know all the specifics mm-hmm. either, but I can learn, and I can be there, and I can be a support and a voice and actively do something and not just talk about it.
Okay. Before I grab some phone calls, Robert, briefly, if there were a one-shot state aid of $10, $15, $20 million to make sure no teachers are cut in Rochester classrooms next month, do you think that would be too enabling to a district that has mismanaged its funds for too long?
Yeah, because you're incentivizing the district not to fix the issue. I mean, you sort of fix it for them, and then it's like, well, the issue's not fixed.
There's moral hazard here.
They're right, there's moral hazard. There's a misappropriation issue. Full stop.
But it could. Go ahead. Sorry. Well, I was going to say, I mean, can't that money be conditional? Where we actually, you get the money, you get the one-shot aid, but this is it, and fix what's going on here, and let's talk about the plan. And if that plan is approved, if we can present a plan mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. say, here's what we're going to do, and we don't have all the answers right now, but here's what we're going to do to fix this so that this does not happen again, do you still not support the idea of saving these teachers and the children, you know, in the current situation that we're in?
Well, I mean, I think there's some stakeholders in this process who sort of haven't looked at the other issues so that we can save mm-hmm. some money. So I think before we say, it's the teachers, and we forgot that Dr. Urbanski sort of framed it as the Christmas massacre to sort of scare us, mm-hmm. you know. But quite frankly, I was mad before teachers were getting laid off. I was mad when Trayvon Rhoades died. Mm-hmm. Full stop. Mm-hmm. The attorney general was here. And quite frankly, what Flint is the water, Rochester is the education. Mm. So for us to sort of play pity pat, we've been playing pity pat since 1987 when Dr. Urbanski was elected, the teachers went on strike, and then we've been just playing pity pat, and it's just like, what, something's got to give. It's a misappropriation issue. Mm-hmm. And I'll say this, if I had a son, and since 1987, I started off giving that son $25, and by 3% increase, kept getting that son, and I felt like he wasn't appropriate mm-hmm. it. At some point, I would say, all right, I got to stop giving you the money because you're misappropriating it. You need to spend it this way. I'm your dad. You should spend it this way. And that's what we're saying with the district. We got to stop saying that, because when the bailout comes, we're not incentivized to change anything about the bureaucracy, governance process, and how stakeholders wield too much power than others. And so that's what I'm saying.
All right, let's get some feedback. Keith, first on the phone. Go ahead, Keith.
Hey, Evan, the show you brought up about, like, topics for five other shows. Real quick, I think there might be an apples-to-orange comparison. I could be wrong, but I believe capital improvement comes from a different pot than regular state aid does. For example, I think the school has already been awarded, the city school district, $1.2 billion in capital improvements. That being said, a lot of questions remain. How did they get into this financial position? They're $50 to $60 million over budget. Did somebody screw up the budget? Has there been wasteful spending? Nobody knows the answer to that, so I don't think you should throw money at the problem until you find out the answers. Now, capital improvement. Monroe High School, they got 80-inch high-definition TVs. Are they making the kids smarter? There's a lot of money that's spent on capital improvements for wants versus needs. So all that being said, the state should adjust the policy when it comes to taxpayer support is, let's take care of the needs first, and then we'll go to the wants. because a college-level football field for a high school doesn't make any kids any smarter or better students.
All right,
but, man, do we spend the money for it.
Keith, thank you. You want to add to that, Rob?
Well, I just want to juxtapose that because I was at McDonald's across the street, and there was a fight going on with Seven McGee and allowing him to play or not. And Seven McGee was my student in eighth grade. And so he's now playing, now already committed to a D1 school. And he just talked about how he was just so anxious to, because he's already committed to Oregon University, I just wanted to play on that field, and how modernization shows students that you care, and that it's just not rich white kids that we can capitally improve buildings. That black kids, when you improve the buildings, you say you're saying we care. You can have a nice football field. You can have nice TVs, because when you don't have all of these, you have all of these structural sort of issues. You know, you're showing them that you don't care. If you put an elementary school in the basement of a building, like you go to Franklin High School, there's an elementary school in the basement of it. What are you conveying to children who are building their sort of child development? What sort of trauma are you building by putting them in an old building when there's buildings all around us being built in Rochester? What are we conveying?
I 100% agree with that. It is, environment is everything. Environment is it shows value, and these children will feel value. They need the sunlight streaming in on them. They can't be in a dark basement and still think you're going to learn in a way that's inspiring. So thank you for saying that.
Keith, thank you. Rebecca writes to the program and says, I have used my position, power, and agency by staying in the city with my child. My child does attend a private school, but I wanted to keep my tax money in the city. I understand not everyone can do that. And the answer to me is countywide education. But I appreciate the honesty here. Most people in suburbs don't care. That needs to change for our community to change. Mm. Okay, no to countywide, Robert. You say, Amanda Chestnut on Twitter saying, is now the time for countywide schools?
No.
Why? Just briefly, mm-hmm. Kind of summing up.
Really briefly. Well, there was a Gallup poll that juxtaposed HBCUs and public white institutions, and it showed that black and brown students there was improved self-worth, there was improved self-value on HBCU campuses. And if you know, historical black mm-hmm. campuses across the country are, you know, mostly black students. So if you look at that Gallup poll that was released, you see sort of this, you could juxtapose that with K-12, and you could say, you just can't solve everything by putting everybody together.
But if we desegregate, though, and desegregation isn't like urban suburban, right, where there's just a couple of black kids in a majority white school. If we desegregate to the point where it is much more equal, the numbers that we have, where it's, you know, 40% white, 50% African American, 10% whatever, that there are studies that show that that is valuable, that that does benefit all sides. It benefits both kids, teachers, the community, everything, and actually gives you a better, broader, more diverse perspective, multicultural perspective. So I don't disagree about the HBCUs for sure. I just wonder if, you know, it would at the K-12 level actually be a really beneficial thing that sends kids out into the world with very different perspective.
I still have to fix entrenched poverty, which was created and sort of protected for many, many years. You want to add mm-hmm. to that question on countywide schools briefly?
Yeah, so even without, I'd say, the question of desegregation, which I think I agree is important, I really think it's about a shared commitment to a community of children, right? Mm-hmm. So if you, a single district is a message that we are all together in this community and we're advocating for all of the children of that community. And I really think that the power differential matters here, and that it's going to be, it's ingrained by the segregation of the city versus the suburbs.
Okay. Well, and as we get ready to wrap here, you know, we've heard different perspectives on what can be done to prevent cuts next month in Rochester. Robert, let's close with this thought for you as we think about a full community actually caring about its kids, not just one town caring about one town or whatever. You will be convinced that the suburbs care about the city, especially the city of Rochester School District, if what?
They give up some of their budget and send it to the school district.
Can they do that legally?
I mean, the state is sort of saying, they've been to town so many times and said everything's on the table. So, I mean, if everything's on the table and if the state is listening.
But does that go against the argument you made earlier, which is we already spend a lot on education?
We do. We do. And so we have to I'm saying what we do have to do is we have to address the misappropriation issue first. Full stop. So, you know, I think you keep trying to push me off that.
No.
Or make sure that I'm still there, but I'm still there.
You're still there. Okay. Do you think the suburbs have shown that they care about the city in this case?
No.
Yeah, I agree totally. And it's you can wear the red shirts, but until you start to sacrifice something tangible.
Yes. Zero-sum game.
Resources.
Yes. Zero-sum
money.
Game.
That's it.
Zero-sum game. I think often we have this rhetoric that says, well, no, it's a rising tide lifts all boats and we can all.
Yes.
But sometimes you have to be willing to give up.
Yes.
And that's hard. History has shown that power protects power and wealth protects wealth. And
nobody desegregates without force.
Yeah, it's hard. There's a lot of things that have to happen. So, before anything would ever get to the point of real significant change. But I'm grateful for the conversation. And Jenny Mayer, you started it. Thanks for starting it.
Thank you. Thank you for continuing it.
Well, I appreciate that. Jenny's a resident of Fairport. Jesse Keating's a resident of Pittsford. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Evan.
And Robert Hoggard, you're going to hear more from him, former RCSD teacher and a doctoral student at the Warner School of Education. Always good. Thank you.
Oh, thanks for having me back, Evan.
You got it. More connections coming up.